Today on the Scott Radley Show on 900 CHML.
Welcome to the Scott Radley Show for pre-Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, if you were. Glad you're along with us as you probably are preparing furiously for holidays or stuffing a turkey or whatever it takes. Whatever you have to do, do it. Just have us on in the background. It's okay. We're glad you're here. We're glad you're here on this Friday for, every Friday we do something called the Brightest Conversation in Hamilton Radio. No different today. Even if it is just 2 days before Christmas and people's minds are shutting down and they're foggy through a haze of eggnog and other things, we are here and we are going to offer the brightest conversation in Hamilton Radio. And there is only one natural way to do that. If you remember the story of Christmas from the Bible, the wise men came from the east. So naturally, Jamie West joins us tonight.
How long did it take you to write that?
About 30 seconds when I was trying to think, what should I say about Jamie West today? And I thought, the wise men were from the east. So naturally, if it's the brightest conversation, let's bring Jamie West in today. I don't know that says.
It's cute. What can I say? this is what you do. You're a writer. You're gifted with the word and a turn of the phrase and all of that.
I thought you were going to say I'm a bloviating gas bag, which is the usual thing. So, rearranging 26 letters every day. That's all we do.
There you go. And I know Santa Claus wasn't available to you this evening because, of course, he's too busy getting ready for the ride tomorrow night. So he was not available. So you got a guy whose midsection is starting to look like Santa Claus. So I'm kind of filling
aren't
in.
We all? Aren't we all? Yeah. This, I was going to say, this is probably going to be the first normal Christmas, I would think, for a lot of people in a bunch of years. Yeah. But normal, you're right. Normal means we all look a little more like Santa after the COVID 15 or 20 or 25 or whatever it is.
Absolutely. And in my case, I started to realize that during COVID, when I wasn't going out a lot, that meant I didn't have to shave a lot. And then the next thing I realized was my beard was starting to come in really white at 56 years of age. So I thought, geez, maybe I could, impersonate new Santa sometime,
New career. There are a few. A couple of weeks ago, there was a great piece in The Spectator about a guy from Hamilton who was doing online Santa visits for people. Maybe that's a thing for down the road. All of us who now have that white beard and are getting a little chunkier. whatever the word is, thank goodness for Santa. It's a career option for those who are moving up a few years. So
yeah.
But do you think this is going to be finally a normal Christmas for people? That's what I'm kind of looking at this like. It's finally people can get back together.
You know what? It feels like it to me. It does. And when I say, what you'd ask, why does it feel that way? And it feels that way just because of the lead up. I don't know about you, but as I've been sort of out and about, I've sensed a more normal kind of pace out there, pre-Christmas pace, if you will. The stores have been a little bit busy. Now, I don't go to the mall. One of the things the pandemic did for me was it brought me into the world of online shopping, and I probably am not going to depart from it at any point because it's just far too convenient for me. I don't like going to the malls, but when I'm, zipping here and zipping there and I'm in the grocery store and other specialty stores and stuff, I just get the feeling that it's okay. And then as I talk to people, lots of people have been saying to me, we're bringing back traditions that we had before the pandemic, and everybody seems a little bit excited about the get-togethers. Now,
I'll tell you one tradition. You mentioned the mall. I'll tell you one tradition that's back that shows that things might be back to normal. I was given the finger at the mall while trying to find a parking spot the other day. I felt like it was normal Christmas again. The battle, the death battle for a parking spot at the mall before Christmas, in the weeks before Christmas, is once people have returned to their usual sort of level of simmering rage before shopping for Christmas gifts, I know things are normal again.
Well, they are. And we've gone from painting inspirational sayings on rocks and leaving them in parks and baking bread to giving the finger. So obviously everything's back to normal.
Obviously it is. And I always find it funny that at Christmas time, that's the only time. I shouldn't say it's the only time. It's generally about the only time that I ever experienced people with that level of anger in their car. I mean, there's road rage all the time. I know I saw a story a couple of weeks ago that said that Hamilton was, what was it, the highest or near the highest cities for road rage in Ontario. Don't know what that says about us. But yeah, the Christmas shopping, the joy and majesty of Christmas shopping seems to bring that out in us an awful lot.
Yeah, and joy and majesty and Christmas shopping do not go together for me. They never have. But you know, the whole parking thing, I just want people listening to the show tonight to understand. Maybe you're, I don't know. Maybe you're a new
out
driver.
Driving right now. Maybe you're out right
maybe
now
you're driving
looking for a
right
parking
now.
Spot.
Right. Here's the thing about the etiquette, okay? If somebody's got their signal on, the spot is theirs. you vacate. You just say, okay, the guy's, you know, the guy's got it. First guy to have his signal, that's like drawing, right? You're a six shooter. First guy to put his signal on, he or she's got the spot.
You're saying you get upset when you've been waiting for 8 minutes with your blinker on for the person to load their trunk and they back out towards you. So the car that comes whipping around the corner and into your line and veers in before you can, you're saying that bothers you.
That bothers me in the extreme.
I'm being facetious. That is, I believe there should be an exception in the criminal code that should be justifiable homicide.
I was just going to say the same thing, you know, at least justifiable physical assault or something like that. You know, I mean, all kidding aside, it's crazy, but it also speaks to how, oh my goodness, how self-focused people tend to be general. And then at Christmas, even though it's the giving season, it gets worse somehow.
Well, it's the giving the finger season sometimes. So it's, you know, it works.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Jamie, I got so excited about my ridiculous intro to you at the beginning that I forgot to actually properly introduce you. You are not just a guy who's been on this station with shows over the years. You've been a CHCH reporter. Everyone knows that. You're the guy behind West Pro Media. You have podcasts. Tell about the podcast quickly.
Yeah. So we've got two podcasts, but the first one in the vein of what I've done for 35 years in the media, it's a new one called Music is Medicine. And it's strictly interviews with musical wizards of all descriptions. We've had Colin James on the show. We've had Natalie McMaster on the show. We've had Sass Jordan on the show. And the list just goes on and on. So if you're looking for some interesting conversation, check out Music is Medicine. And I've got another one called Divorce Solutions, which is tied to my new business, DivorceCom, which we'll discuss in the new year when everybody's had it with each other after the Christmas holidays.
All right, there you go. Proper introduction. I should have done that earlier. All right. As I said, we are going to be getting into all of the debates around this season. These are the things that people have fought about for millennia, well, or years. I don't know if we go back millennia with this debate, but nonetheless, give you an example. We're going to start with this one, Jamie. You get your choice. Is the appropriate Christmas tree real or artificial?
Oh, that's very interesting. That's a very interesting question. As a matter of fact, in the commercial break, I was actually mulling that over. I had no idea that you were going to bring that up, but here we are. I guess it all depends on what you grew up with. In my case, I grew up with a real Christmas tree. So when I was a kid, you know, a few years of establishing that for me as a kid, if my mother had come to me, you know, when I was like 8 or 9 and said, oh, we're going to get an artificial tree, I'd have been upset. Like, you got to have a real tree, and it had to be a specific kind of real tree as well. But I guess as you get older, you realize how messy real Christmas trees are. I've still had one forever.
I always think of that line from Chevy Chase from Christmas Vacation, a little full, a lot of sap.
Exactly. But you know, when I was a kid with the real Christmas trees, I don't know if you remember that you had to have a Scots pine. Some people called them a Scotch pine, but they were a Scots pine, which was a Christmas tree with a very thick branch on them, as opposed to what has become popular in the last 20 years or so, the spruce trees, the Fraser firs, that kind of thing. It had to be that kind of tree. It couldn't be a balsam fir. It had to be a Scotch pine. or Christmas was ruined, you know? And, but yeah, artificial trees, when I was growing up in the 70s and early 80s, they looked like crap.
They did. We had a neighbor. They looked like such crap that we had a neighbor across the street from us. True story, who on Christmas Day, their house burned down because they didn't want a fake tree, but they wanted a real tree, but they had to do old school with the candles on it.
Oh, yeah. No.
And they burned their house down on Christmas Day. But here's the tricky part for, see, so many people now, everybody is an environmentalist now. How do you choose? So you've got a choice. You either take a plastic product made from petroleum, which everybody, we can't be having any kind of fossil fuels involved in our world. You either get a plastic tree made from petroleum products, or you chop down a tree and you ruin a life and you take the oxygen out of the air. You're really kind of screwed if you're an environmentalist either way.
Well, I don't think there's an environmental argument to be made for cutting down a Christmas tree. They're farmed, for crying out loud. I almost said something else. They're farmed.
But it's still a tree that's helping the environment.
Oh my goodness gracious! Come on, enough's enough of that. There's no argument to be made there. In fact, you're absolutely right. If the argument is you should put up a artificial tree for the sake of the environment, I'm sorry, you must be out of your mind, because there's far more damage to the environment in the creation of a fake Christmas tree than cutting down a real one.
And yet there are, we've had on the station, we've had the woman, I can't remember her name right now, pardon me, who speaks for she's a spokesman for the Christmas Tree Growers Association. They're having a hard time growing them. They're having a hard time finding farmers who will grow them. The cost is too much. The land is too valuable. It's becoming harder and harder to find real ones.
Well, and I guess at some point, probably we'll see that come to an end. If those economic factors are pressuring people out of the business and new generations don't want to pick it up and there's no profitability, then I guess that'll be the case. And I guess on one hand, the good news is that the artificial trees that are out there on the market, you can barely distinguish them from a real tree.
And they last a long time. We've had one since probably we were married 5 years. We've had one mostly because it was either our first or our second year of being married. This is a while back now. We somehow fell behind on the whole, we didn't have kids. We fell behind on the whole Christmas decoration thing. I guess we were busy with work or whatever. And it was either a day or two before Christmas, I went to Fortino's down on Dundurn Street.
I've done that.
It ended up being, we had a Christmas tree that the one half of it looked okay, the half facing out, but when we got it, the other half was Charlie Brown. And by the time we got it home, and probably by Boxing Day, all the needles had fallen off. I don't even know. Back then, we probably paid $40 or $50 for it. It was like, okay, let's get a plastic one that we just pay for once.
Yeah, well, they are really pricey.
They're not cheap.
Yeah,
they're not cheap.
The tree that I got this year, which is a real tree, and I got it early because, I heard there was going to be a shortage and so on and so forth, and my kids insisted that I had to get a real tree. It was over $100. It was about $120 bucks.
Wow.
Yeah. For an 8 foot tree. It was not inexpensive.
You should have the Christmas fern instead.
Right. Exactly.
Just decorate the Christmas fern. Have it, something easy. All right. We have a 30. So this next question, you only get 30 seconds to answer. On that Christmas tree, is the proper decoration white lights or colored lights?
Colored lights, hands down. Period.
Wow. Not even a thought about that one.
No, I didn't even have to think about it. It was as a kid, I know we're almost out of time, it was colored lights. They used to be those painted style bulbs.
The big ones.
Larger
big
bulbs. You remember they really glowed. They weren't the clear ones.
No, they were headlights.
Yeah, exactly.
And with the brights on.
Yeah, exactly. So no, white lights. I white lights are great, but there's just something. Colors more colorful. White lights.
Really?
Are just...
Yeah. Well, white is all colors, though, Jamie. Really? I get your point, but it was back in the old days. Those ones. It's like, kids, don't stare directly at the tree. You'll burn your retinas. Those lights are too bright. They are too bright.
Get back.
By the way, there was a poll done on this one recently, and you're in the minority on this one. 60%. go with the just the white lights, go with the simple, only 40% with the color. I'm kind of with you though. And all right. And so just to finish this thought, little bulbs or big bulbs?
I prefer big bulbs. I prefer big bulbs. It's just, again, it's back. It's it's back to tradition. That's all it is. It's again, it's how I grew up. So that's all it's based on.
Nothing else. So a natural tree with big, colorful bulbs in the West household. There you go. That's what about yours?
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
It is Friday. It is the night before Christmas, and we are debating all the hardest hitting, most profound Christmas seasonal debates that people have had over the years. Jamie West with me in this dive into rage and Christmas anger.
I thought you were just going to say in this dive, and I was going to say it's not so bad in here.
Not yet. Give it time. All right. Okay. So we talked about trees. We talked about life, you know, those things that people have fought about in their family. Yeah. So let's get into this next one. This is really when we start getting into the fighting here. And that is, when is the right time to open presents? I'm going to give you four options, which are the four most common, I think, times that people do this. Christmas morning, obviously. Christmas Eve, spread them out over a bunch of different times. Or Christmas evening, not Christmas Eve, but the night of Christmas. What is the proper time to open presents?
Oh, boy. Wow. Okay. Well, for me, it's Christmas morning. Does that help?
No, our family was always that too. But we had friends, and back when I was a kid, we had friends, and their tradition was Christmas Eve. And even if it was only one, you got to choose one on Christmas Eve. You always tried to gun for like what you thought was going to be the best one, which was usually the biggest package, which often was not the best gift. But there were people.
That's true.
We knew people who it was Christmas Eve. I've never known.
I did too. Yeah.
I've never known anyone who's waited till Christmas night, because that would seem to only be designed to make your kids lose their minds. Could you imagine?
I can't. But the Christmas Eve thing's interesting. In my experience, it was usually families who would attend midnight mass, for example,
right,
on Christmas Eve. They'd have a Christmas Eve feast, usually in the Catholic faith. They'd have a Christmas Eve feast, and then they'd go to mass at midnight, and then they'd come home after midnight, and they would celebrate with their gifts. And I thought that was kind of cool, but I thought they must be so tired after all that eating, and then, you know, going to mass. And
the kids weren't. The kids weren't. You're never too tired to open Christmas gifts. The beauty of that, and we never did that. I remember like once, maybe twice in my youth, we convinced my parents to do a Christmas Eve one present thing. But even then, that was rarely successful, no matter how hard we cajoled or cried or whatever else. But that would be, if you're a parent, there's some method to that beyond just a tradition, because now you can sleep in. You're not going to be woken up at 4 o'clock on Christmas morning.
Oh yeah, there's a definite benefit to you as an adult, for sure. But did your parents let you open one gift on Christmas Eve?
That's what I'm saying. A couple times.
Maybe
twice in our life that we were able to do that. And I'm not sure why they relented those times, because they were, no, Christmas morning was the time to do it.
Yeah, and it's funny, as I think back, I mean, I think even as a kid, man, I was definitely a different kid. I think I loved the anticipation more than the opening of the gifts themselves. Yeah, I was excited about the possibilities. I don't know about you as a kid, but I would look under the Christmas tree, and I would watch gifts sort of arrive and appear under the Christmas tree as we got closer to Christmas Day, and that was very exciting. And I wasn't a kid that snooped. I didn't snoop around, but I would go over and I would look at the packages, and then the fun was in trying to guess what might be in them.
I've always, you know, every Christmas, no matter how many gifts I've got, there are probably two that I remember over the years that I received that really stand out. And I don't know why they stand out. One was I used to play goal in hockey. And one year I got a really great pair of goalie pads, which my sister, even all these years later, I was probably 12, has never let me forget. It's always been, oh, you got the goalie pads, because they were way more than, you know, anything else. But the other one, I don't know why I remember this one. I got one of those Evel Knievel toys where you put the thing on a holder, the Evel Knievel on his motorcycle.
You've got to be kidding.
And you pumped it and pumped it and it built up the air pressure. And then because the TV commercials for that were awesome. You would fly like 80 feet and land on the wheels every time. And every time I did it, he flew 4 feet, went lopsided, fell off the motorcycle in midair. And I don't think I landed it once.
You must have been like, we must have been traveling in the same orbit. You just stole one of my stories.
SST.
The SST. And I had the Evel Knievel van with all the tools and all the stuff that went with that. Like you could really go fancy with that. Well, that was Christmas of 1974 for me.
About right. Yeah. And
that was all I wanted for Christmas. And there it was on Christmas morning. And so isn't that funny that we both had that same experience and the same experience with getting Evel to do the thing in the commercial and having no luck whatsoever doing that.
But you know what we say, isn't it interesting? I bet you there were 27 million kids who all have the same story back then, because Evel Knievel
was totally taken.
I'm amazed that all of us, that there are not many more kids of our age with brain damage from building ramps on the street and trying to ride our bikes and doing jumps.
And we did that stuff too. You're absolutely right.
Cinder blocks with a piece of plywood and then you try and jump and, you know, amazing that our heads were harder. All right. So go ahead.
No, I was just going to say there was one other thing. Do you remember the Vertibird? The helicopter that was on a plastic sort of like stick, and it had a base in the middle and it ran on batteries, and you had two levers, a lever on the right and a lever on the left. And the thing would take flight, that the helicopter propeller would turn, it would lift off the ground, and you could make it go around on this circumference.
Sounds dangerous, which is awesome.
And yeah, and then you could hover the thing and you could make it drop down and pick things up off the ground and circle around. The Vertibird. Everybody should look that up. That was my other favorite toy. Anyway, you were going to say
all
something.
All right,
no,
okay. The next thing then. So when it comes to opening presents, so we've agreed on Christmas morning, which by the way, another poll, vastly, that was the choice. 76% Christmas morning, 12% Christmas Eve, 10% spread them out, only 2% Christmas night. So, all right. So we've agreed on that one. But when it comes time to open the gifts, there's two ways to do this. Everybody gets to go and open them at once, or one at a time with patience around the circle. Which way is the right way?
Oh, boy. You know, I'm of two minds on this one. Over the years, did a lot of, you know, one at a time. And that way everybody gets to see what's been received. And that's fun. I mean, it's fun to see, you know, what everybody's getting for Christmas, and you can have, you know, but it can take a long time. And I've done the other as well.
I would definitely be when I was a kid, these are two different answers. When I was a kid, it was just go for it. That would have been my choice.
Yeah. And I would want, as a kid, I think that's probably what I did. And I would want my kids to kind of do that. I wouldn't want to put them through the whole thing of, you know, one at a time kind of thing. I think as an adult, you want to savor the experience a little bit. So you're not in a rush. Anyway, go ahead.
No, because I was saying as a kid, I would definitely want the one at a time when I was opening them. But now that I have had kids, especially now, I mean, the kids are grown now, but when they were young kids, you want to see them open them. And if it's just a complete flurry of paper going in every direction, I mean, it already is with dogs in the house who would decide to get in and tear everything up. But if you want to see them open them, and also, you also want to kind of, I think, teach them to be appreciative rather than just like a mass of stuff.
Absolutely. But, you're right. You want to see the look of disappointment on their face when they open that that item of clothing.
That they get the underpants.
That you got so wrong, but you thought was so right. Want to see that crestfallen look on their face. Oh, Let's be honest.
Thanks, Grandma. Oh, hand-knitten scarf. I love it.
Pixie slippers.
Yeah, that's right. You know, look, a hand-knit scarf from Grandma right now, That would be fantastic. When you're seven, you may as well say, here, take a screwdriver and plow it into your ear hole. I mean, it's about the same level of excitement.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Jamie West with me this evening, and we are debating all the Christmas debates, all the things that people have differed with or disagreed with or you know, just sort of have a thought on over the years. It doesn't always have to be an angry debate. We don't always have to be the angry elf from Elf,
although that's
a great scene. Here we go, though. Christmas letters. Family Christmas letters. Some people do these all the time. They send out their letters. Some people never do this. Your thought, when you receive the family Christmas letters from someone, do you read every word and say, oh, those are really sweet, that's really nice? Or do you go, yeah, okay, whatever. And do you say, yeah, I don't need that?
I go, yeah, okay, whatever. Don't need that. I find them very impersonal and just impersonal. So I've never been a fan of those at all. How about you?
You
probably send one out, don't you?
No, we don't. I don't think we ever have that I recall. And I'll tell you what, I have two answers to this one, because to me, it all depends upon how they are written. There are those we have received over the years that sound like it's adult show and tell, which back in school we used to call adult bring and brag.
Right, exactly.
Where it's you're sending out a letter to announce all the wonderful successes and triumphs of your family and why everyone else should feel lesser about themselves because we're the greatest family ever.
Right, and Johnny got all A's and Susie got all.
And there's others that come out and I do read them and I think, you know what, it's not that. It's just, you know, just so you know what's going on in our family. Here's where we are these days. And those ones I quite actually enjoy. It's all to me in the delivery. It's in the execution of how you
always, right? I mean, you're a writer, you know that you can feel you can strike a tone in the words you choose to write and how you put those words together. And you're absolutely right. Some people have a real knack for doing it well, and others not so much.
Well, and I think that, you know, and I don't want to be speaking to anyone in particular, and I'm really not at this point, but it seems to me that the reason you're sending this often is reflected in the letter. If you're sending it, as I say, because, you know, we've got three or four kids perhaps, and they're all in different places now, and nobody keeps track of, nobody can know where they all are. And so-and-so is in this university. And so that to me is fine. I think, you know, when you're going into writing one of those, when you're going into penning one of those, what your intent is. And if it's, we have to make ourselves look great, and this is our chance, and we're all going to pose in some, you know, and get some glorious professional photographer to take some, you know, like that whole thing just, but if it's...
So if you were going to write one, I'm stealing your show.
No, it's good.
If you were going to write one, what kind of content would you put in it? What do you think you would do?
I just think people want to have, if you're going to send one and you want people to read them, I think people just want to know, honestly, where people are in the family and what you're doing. And you want to know something? Some of the ones that have meant the most, that may sound weird, or have struck the best chord, have been ones where people are saying, you know, we'd really appreciate your prayers or really appreciate your thoughts because, you know, we've got some tough times. And it's not about just trying to blow your horn.
Yeah, I think if I were going to do one, and I never will, but if I were going to, I think I would want to draw my audience's attention more to things that I've observed that are a little more outside myself.
Sure.
Over the years. But that's partly because, you know, we've spent a lot of time in the media too, right? And we're kind of trained to tell people stories that really have nothing to do with us personally.
It's an awareness, I think, is the biggest thing. Okay, so now some people send Christmas letters. Other people, just to be around their house, will do the photos with Santa Claus. You go to the mall and you have your kid's picture taken at the mall. Now, I haven't been in a number of years because, again, the kids are older now. I think they've become quite expensive. Nonetheless, there's a reason I asked this question. What is the proper age to stop making your kids have their photo with Santa Claus?
That's a good question. I guess it's whatever age the child decides they've had enough of that. I don't know. I really like, I don't.
My parents made few parenting mistakes, but I think making me still take one at 13 was too much.
Oh, they made you take one at 13.
Oh,
Okay.
they well, we had had this habit of every year we had done one, and my sister was 3 years younger, and so she was still in that sweet spot, and they said, "Okay, get in the picture." And I was taller than Santa Claus. I mean, I was sitting on his lap, and I was a head taller than him. And
Oh, wow.
all the 4-year-olds in line are looking, going, "What's he doing?"
So, how did that make you feel? Were you totally embarrassed?
Oh yes, oh yes. It's okay. It builds character. But
Sure,
I
that's what
was
they
thinking,
say.
you know what? When may maybe when I don't even know what the proper age is, but that was beyond
Yeah, I'm
it.
trying to think about when I bailed out on that. Oh boy.
Now, I did one voluntarily many years later with some friends. I was probably 20, and we thought, "Hey, we're in the
Oh yeah,
mall."
that's different.
That's
That's the
different. That's
yeah,
different.
you know, it's a lark, but I think seriously for me, I think I don't think I had one past the age of 7 or 8. I don't think. And I
No.
think that was it. Yeah, and I had a younger, by the time I was 8, I had a younger sister. So yeah, when I was like 9, it was then it became about you know her. I don't think there's a picture of my sister and I on Santa's knee. 8 years difference. So it then it became, well, you go and sit on Santa's knee and get a picture taken. So yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. I
I
if I
just
had been 13, if I'd been in your shoes, I'd have been dying. I would have been.
I am really hopeful that as we finish cleaning out my parents' condo and get it up for sale, that we don't stumble upon that cache of photos, because I
Oh, I
know
hope you
what'll
do.
happen. No, I know what'll happen. My sister will find it, and somehow they'll end up online.
I know that's the hope.
No,
That's
that's
what I'm
not.
hoping for.
There are certain things in life that we just, there are certain. I am
Oh,
so
yeah.
thankful, Jamie, that we grew up when we did, because there was not cameras everywhere and
Oh,
social
I
media
know.
everywhere. So we didn't have every embarrassing thing we ever did end up online. That said, there are still photographic records, and they are still embarrassing, and they still can
Yeah.
appear.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
All right, Jamie West back with us. Podcaster, broadcaster, marketing guru,
Just general mouthpiece is
owner of a
fine.
fine head of hair, one of the best. I mean, second maybe to Mike Fortune, but lots of other things going on. Listen, Jamie, as I say, we're working through a bunch of these Christmas debates, and I teased it before we went to the news break. Let's just get to the one that some people argue is the greatest Christmas debate of all. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
No, it is not. How can it be a Christmas movie?
Because it's based at Christmas time in the Nakatomi Tower, and John McGrane comes home, or McClane, what's his name? John McClane.
I
John McGrane is the soccer guy from Hamilton. John McClane is the cop in the movie. He comes back to get his wife at their Christmas party, and that's when all this happens. And there's Christmas music that plays from, I think, Run DMC. I mean, it's got to be a Christmas movie.
it's a just a adventure. You know, violent movie. It's that doesn't fit the bill in my view. What about you? Do you think so?
Oh, sure, why not? It's
Oh, come on.
couldn't ha it was at Christmas time, and I'm sure
That's
if I sat
all it
here.
takes to qualify?
Well, I'm sure if I sat here and thought about all the movies that qualify as Christmas movies, some like Elf. Okay, Elf is a Christmas movie, and I know Christmas is involved, but the entire movie does not happen on Christmas Day.
No, but the theme of Christmas is all throughout it. I don't know, man. I, you
I'll
know,
tell
a
you. I'll tell
Die
you.
Hard.
I'll tell you a funny story about Die Hard before we get into this. So
Okay.
a couple of years ago, my wife and I and some friends were down in LA. We were driving around looking at all the stupid stuff, like the we found I put together a map of Hollywood, like homes and stuff that were used in shows and TV. Anyway, we drove by from Modern Family. We drove by Mitch and Cam's house, that like
Okay.
stucco kind of
Yeah.
Spanish looking one. And if you look out the front door, if you're standing in the front door, looking out the front door of Mitch and Cam's house in LA, you are staring at the Nakatomi Tower.
Oh, is that right?
Yep, they're right close to each other. You can see it from the front door. So Mitch and Cam might have been witnesses to the entire terrorist attack in Die Hard. We don't know. It's an unspoken, untold part of the Modern Family story.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm gonna say no, but that's
all right.
That's just me. Maybe it's because I'm not. You know, I was never really a diehard fan, so I think my biases are showing and or prejudices, and I wasn't a Bruce Willis fan either, although I feel terrible for what's happened to him in his personal life with this disorder he's afflicted with. That's a terrible thing. Just not that big of a, so yeah, I think it's more, for me, it's more to do with, I wasn't a fan of the film itself, you know, or that franchise.
Okay. So, and by the way, to give credence to your side of the argument, though I disagree with it, at the Bruce Willis Comedy Central roast, he said, this is his quote, Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. It's a Bruce Willis movie. So for what that counts. But okay. So if Die Hard is not your Christmas movie, what is the Jamie West go-to best ever Christmas movie?
Oh, wow. Whew. I don't, you know, for me, that's not a hard choice. You know, the Alistair Sim version of A Christmas Carol.
Oh, you're a traditionalist.
A very, very much so. And I know there have been lots of Christmas movies produced, you know, since 1951. That one would top the list. There's also one that's Christmas themed called The Homecoming, which was in the early 1970s, and it was a prequel to the Earl Hamner series The Waltons, and it's very good, but you don't see it. I think the movie was made for television. I don't think it was a theatrical release, and it's a little hard to come by, but it's terrific. So yeah, I kind of go back in time. I like movies like Holiday Inn and The Bishop's Wife and It's a Wonderful Life. And
well, you are old school and very sort of sentimental.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess if there's a time of year where I am sentimental, it's probably in that 24 to 48 hour period that we're right, you know, getting into right now as we speak.
And then your cynicism kicks in right away.
It comes back full force on Boxing Day. Get the tree down, get the decorations out of here, you know, throw out the turkey carcass. All right, enough's enough.
Enough. That's all the sweetness I can take. Let me get back to my normal life.
That's right. On Boxing Day, I go over to the big box store and I buy stuff for Valentine's Day. Like that's
see, there you go. That's a good way to do it too. I will go with Christmas Vacation. See,
that's a beauty.
And so just a couple of weeks ago, our family and my son's girlfriend, we were all over, and I decided this was the year we were making it a fully interactive National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
So anyone who's seen the movie, so we went out and bought the moose mugs for the eggnog. Great. And made Aunt Bethany's Jello mold with cat food in it, so we didn't use real cat food. And when the dry turkey was there, we had turkey jerky to eat, and we had Jello for the Jelly of the Month Club, and we had all kinds of stuff. It was the full on
what a fun interactive thing.
Yep, it was a lot of fun. So I don't know that you could do that with Alistair and his. Well, you could summon some ghosts or something, I guess. And do
I'd have to do up a batch of gruel so that you could you could spoon some gruel into your gizzard at the part where Jacob Marley shows up, you know.
Spooning gruel into your gizzard just sounds delightful. it's such a Christmas.
Isn't that a warm thought?
It is. Well, okay, so while you're talking about gruel and that, back to the debates. Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
Yes or no, it's okay to have Christmas dinner out at a restaurant.
Well, it's okay too. Sure. I mean, that wouldn't be my preference. Although some years, I swear, I was so frustrated that I did have sort of fantasy visions of sitting out at a restaurant, you know. I don't think there's anything. No, I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's anything.
I don't think we do it much. That. Some people probably do. I don't think many people do it now, do they? Let us know. Send us a text. Send us a text. 905-645-3221. Send us a text if this is something you do. We used to. For 5 or 6 years, my parents would go to a really nice restaurant. I was growing up in Toronto. We'd go to a really nice restaurant for Christmas dinner. And it was fine. The food was fine. It was all like I was But yeah. To me, there's something about being at either your home or someone in your family's home that, you can let down. You don't have to get dressed up and you don't have to, you know, it's just, I don't know. It seems to fit better. I don't know.
Well, it's a little more, I suppose, you know, it's a little more formal when you go out because, you got to, you're in somebody else's space. It's not your home. I think you're right. I think, you know, most of us want to be around the home fire, so to speak, whether we actually have a, you know, a hearth or not, we want to be around that, maybe at our table that's in our home with maybe a candle or two. And that does make a difference, I think, in how we enjoy the day. I can remember in the past, one Christmas I went to Australia. One of my mother's dearest best friends lives in Melbourne, Australia, and we went there for Christmas, and they're wonderful, wonderful people. And my mother was famous for putting on great Christmases for us as kids. We always had a great Christmas thanks to her, but it didn't feel the same. It didn't feel the same. It was fine, but it didn't feel the same. And
well, there is also something, I am convinced of this, because we have also been away somewhere warm once for Christmas.
Yeah, and how was that?
Well, you were in Australia for that. I mean, and that would have been their summer. It is weird when you've grown up around here. It is weird to do Christmas in short sleeves and a t-shirt and go swimming, and it's hot out and there's no snow. There's no hint of snow. There's no pretend snow. That it's just... there's palm trees. I mean, if you grew up there, I'm sure it's very normal and very fine. But even then, even like movies that are made there or TV shows, they always try and do it in snow, which makes it that Christmas in the wintertime is the proper time.
Yeah.
They're all wrong. The whole other hemisphere, they got it all screwed up. They're all wrong.
That's right. You got it. Yeah. You have to have the snow. It's the only time of year that I kind of hope for a little snow is you know, on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. Not too much. Maybe a few centimeters, just enough to cover the grass, you know,
not enough to need CAA.
Yeah. Not enough for me to have to get out my shovel and for me to have to get off the couch with my turkey and go and shovel anything. I can't be bothered with that.
Okay. No. So we've talked about the idea of whether you can do a restaurant or not and whether you should be out or not. But here's one, a lot of people still, whether it's going to a restaurant or even just for the sake of Christmas Day, a lot of people still dress up for Christmas. They will put on a nice shirt, a nice pair of pants, maybe a tie, maybe more than that. They will do. Is that something that is a good tradition that we should do more of? Because we tend to be exceedingly casual in our lives these days anyway, whether it's work, whether it's going out. We are a casual people now compared to what we used to, or is it good that we are totally casual and we don't have to be tied to these traditions of getting dressed up?
I think for me, I like that idea. Maybe we try to strike a happy medium. Now you're talking to a guy who, you know, almost 7 days out of seven wears black t-shirts and blue denim jeans. That's what I live in.
You're kind of like the Steve Jobs of Hamilton.
It's kind of like that, you know, boy, do I wish I had his brains and his money and, you know, had lived the life he lived. Anyway, it's, you know, the thing is, it's for me now getting dressed up is somewhat novel. And I do enjoy it. I think anybody will tell you, I think it's particularly men will tell you, when you're dressed up, you feel a little better. You've got a little more swagger, you know, you feel a little bit better. Until, of course, you jam down all that turkey dressing and stuff, and then your gut starts to bloat, and then you want to...
Well, you need the elasticized dress pants.
That's what you need. So I don't know. I guess it's whatever floats your boat or whatever, you know.
I don't think
we
dress up enough. I don't think, like, I'm not...
I don't think we do either.
I'm not talking about getting dressed up every single day. There was a time when you did that. I mean, you know.
But you're right. We don't.
But
we don't get dressed up enough.
We've become so casual. That I was watching a video on Facebook or something the other day of a teacher that I know who was teaching in his or her class. I don't want to identify in any way this person. And honestly, they looked like they were in their pajamas. And it's like, if you're going to be in front of a bunch of kids, like, at least put on, in my mind, a polo shirt and a pair of decent pants.
I'm with you all the way on
that. If you're going into a workplace,
time and place.
You know, I torn pants is that like there is no. we have taken the to me we've taken the idea of casual to such an extent that it becomes ludicrous now.
Well, and we're, you know, we're all everybody's afraid of somebody saying you know, or even thinking, never mind saying that it's maybe inappropriate to wear torn pants or pajama bottoms to work or to be a teacher. Oh, I don't feel safe now. I'm being bullied. I don't feel safe. That's my personal self-expression. And I don't feel safe. Like everybody's so hair triggered to that kind of baloney that it's allowed what's happened to happen. And I agree with you. I think that a degree of dress strikes a chord of decorum. And then that, you know, brings on a more mannered room and group. I think that's good. Like I wouldn't have, you know, if my grandparents were around, they would dress up a bit and I would dress up a bit and I'd be instructing and insisting that my children dress up a bit. I wouldn't just let them put on whatever they wanted because I'd want to show some deference and respect to the senior members of the family at the table. That's, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a really good thing.
It's an interesting one because I don't know how many people do this in our family. It was not my dad was very good at what he did and he dressed every day. I mean, my dad wore a tie mm-hmm. every day to work. I don't think there was probably a single day in his working life that he did not wear a tie. And it became sort of a thing. So at Christmas dinner, he oftentimes would have a tie on because that's just yeah. what he wore. That was almost what he was comfortable in. That may be for a lot of people too much. But I do think we lose something when we casualize things to a point that just the idea of getting dressed up is like too much work now, even for one day, for one dinner, for one event.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, that's not to take away from the fun of saying, agreeing that you're going to have this family Christmas dinner. And this year, we're all going to wear our favorite hockey jersey, or we're all going to wear our favorite ugly Christmas sweater, which that's all fun too. You can
do that. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about nothing where nobody, yeah, I mean, if you're going to do a theme, that's great. I love the idea of that. But if it's just, I'm going to show up and I'm just going to like, you know, throw on a pair of fat pants and like,
right.
To me, I'm not talking about every single day of the year. To me, it seems like there are a few days when it's okay to expect that.
Well, sure. And it's supposed to be, Christmas is supposed to be a celebration of a lot of things. And even if you're not religious and you don't necessarily celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ, you're celebrating togetherness with your family. You're celebrating life. You're celebrating, maybe it's been a weird year and your family's come through a tough time. You're celebrating your, you know, getting through all of that, whatever it is, right? Or there's new love or whatever it is. It's a time of celebration and togetherness. And I think that, you know, kind of calls for that kind of thing. If that's, you know, sort of the tone that's being set, nothing wrong with it at all. In fact, as I say, it's a good thing. Need more of it generally in society. Bring back fedoras too. I need those.
You know what? That would be a, the folks who, what do you call them? The folks who make hats, the,
Milners. Are they Milners?
No, is that what they're called? I'll think of it. There's another name for it. I'll think of it in a moment.
Oh, but, well, yeah.
The hat makers. That's
I thought they were called, I thought they were called Milners. No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I'll look it up. Haberdashers.
Haberdasher. That's what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the line from Spinal Tap when they were talking about that. The haberdashers. Yes, the haberdashers would love it if the fedoras came back as a regular thing, and maybe, you know, bow ties and poofs as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Now you're driving me crazy here because now I got to find out what's a hat maker.
And no, yes, even those ties with lights that light up and everything, they count. So that's okay.
It's a Milner. It's a Milner. Milner. A Milner is someone who designs or makes hats, especially women's hats.
What's a haberdasher?
Oh, okay, let me hang on a second. What's a haberdasher? I think that a haberdasher,
a dealer in men's clothing. Ah, okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, they'd like it too. So the Milners and the haberdashers. It's a celebration for all.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Jamie West back with us, as he has been, as we debate the unimportant issues of Christmas, but the ones that probably get most people fired up. But this one, Jamie, we go from a lot of kind of silliness and peripheral stuff that really, you know, is, okay, do we have a real tree or a fake tree? And is Die Hard a Christmas movie? All that kind of stuff. Here's one that people really have been bent out of shape about a lot. Is there anything wrong with saying Merry Christmas, or should you be saying Happy Holidays to be more inclusive?
You know, I love the question. Or as they all say nowadays, Scott, thank you for the question. Thank you for the question. Appreciate that. At all these news conferences, thank you for doing your job and asking me a question. There's no question for me whatsoever that Merry Christmas is absolutely fine, because the entire greeting is bathed in an intent of giving and joy and a wish that something great will happen to you. It's got nothing to do with any, it's obviously Christmas is, you know, a religious holiday, but if you're not Christian, I can't see how you could possibly be offended by me wishing you a Merry Christmas. Any more than I would be offended by my Jewish friends saying Happy Hanukkah to me. I mean, it's all down to intent. What's the intent behind your message? Right? I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Well, no, I agree with that. It's interesting. About a week and a half ago, I wrote a piece in the Spec about something similar, because I was sort of caught off guard when I saw this thing online. It was a list of Christmas events, and one of them was a Christmas concert at the Temple Anshe Shalom in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, mm-hmm. I'm not totally up on my Jewish theology, but I'm pretty sure that's not normal. And so I called the rabbi and I said, is this, you know, what you do normally? He goes, no, of course not. We rented it out, but we allow them to be there. And we got talking about this a little bit. And here's what he had to say. This is Rabbi Cohen from the temple, about people who accidentally or intentionally, whatever, wish a Merry Christmas. The fact they're giving, this is his quote, the fact that they're giving me a positive holiday greeting at this time of year is great. And then I said, really? Like, that's, and he goes, what could possibly be wrong with that? I mean, the more joy, the more exactly. light that we can bring into this world, particularly at the darkest time of the year, there's absolutely nothing bad about that. And I heard that and I went, okay, so if the leading rabbi in the city doesn't get offended when someone somehow doesn't notice that he's a rabbi and wishes him Merry Christmas, or it slips or whatever, why would anyone else? But we do. Not you and I, obviously, but people do. We have this endless fight about whether or not it should be Merry Christmas, or, oh, I'm going to offend somebody if I say Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, my, you know, it's for me, it's always been Merry Christmas, and I don't have time when I'm out and about in places, because I will talk to people. I will greet people that I don't even know. I'll smile at them. I'll say hello at different times of the year. I'll say Merry Christmas to people in stores and things. And I don't know whether they're Jewish or Hindu or what. I don't feel like I have to sit and think about, oh, well, what if the person's not this? What if the person's not that? Because I know what my intent is. And it's just like the rabbi said, it's the same thing. I mean, if I, you know, I've got lots of Jewish friends, so I know that. And so I won't reach out to them at Hanukkah and say Merry Christmas. I'll say Happy Hanukkah to them, because I know that they're celebrating that holiday. And vice versa, I will get Merry Christmas greetings from my Jewish friends.
But if a Jewish friend said to you, Jamie, Happy Hanukkah, and you're not Jewish, would you be offended?
Not at all.
I don't. This is the thing. You're right. This is not a celebration where someone walks up to you and the greeting is, screw you. Right?
I mean, that's right.
Like that you would take as, okay, now I'm being offended by that. If someone is wishing you a greeting, no matter what it is, if it's meant in good faith and in positive ways, does it really matter what it is? If they walked up to you and said, tulips forever. I mean, like, I don't care. I'm thinking of something. Like, does it matter if it's meant well? Who cares?
And here's the other thing. If somebody comes up to me and they say, Happy Holidays, great. I know what the intent is. They're being positive. They're giving me a positive greeting. They're saying, be happy. Hope you're happy. You know, maybe what's wrong with that? What's wrong with things is when we decide what's right and wrong about things that are clearly intended to be positive. It's when we start really dissecting things and deciding to try to put a negative spin on something.
Well, can I suggest that one, and this is something that you may disagree with, you may agree with, I don't know. It seems to me that almost all of the times that someone says we can't say Merry Christmas or we shouldn't say Merry Christmas because we might offend somebody, those people have not really asked the people who they think might be offended, who generally are never offended. It's a preemptive expectation of offense that doesn't really exist.
Couldn't agree more. Well said. I mean, that's exactly right. We make up all kinds of stories in our own minds about how people will feel or whatever without ever asking them. And that's just a general problem that we have, not even within our own families. You know, we decide how a certain member of our family feels about something without ever actually asking them that. We're so afraid that we don't even have the guts to ask the person, how do you feel about this? You know,
it is, it's a good, now we didn't even get into, hey, we got 1 minute here. What about a public place? What if City Hall, you know, there's always that question about on the Jolly Cut, Merry Christmas or Happy Hall, whatever. What about that? Is it, do you think it's still okay if a public facility says Merry Christmas?
Yes, I do. And if they want to put up Happy Hanukkah when Hanukkah falls on the calendar and Happy Kwanzaa and everything else, then I'm all for that too. Like, go ahead. It doesn't have to just be that, but we know when traditionally the Christmas season is. It always falls on, you know, the 25th of December. So no, I don't have a problem with that at all. I would never have fallen for that political correct nonsense.
Well, there's one other thing. We got to go to a break here, but there's one other reason why I agree with you. And that is, I do think that there is also something that we don't like to talk about this. We don't like to think about this. To me, there is also something about tradition, that the country has certain traditions. And, you know, some will say, yeah, but the indigenous people were here before we did Merry Christmas. Sure. Okay. And I, as you said, I don't mind having those traditions, but traditionally for hundreds of years now, in Canada, it was Merry Christmas is one of the things at this time of year. I don't know that, as you say, I don't know that we have to ignore the others, but I also don't know that we have to just obliterate the tradition and pretend it didn't happen.
No, we don't. And in fact, I know we got to run, but it's not even a matter of ignoring the others. In fact, I would make the argument that let's talk more about those ones too. Like, I want to know more about all of that. Let's talk about that too. But we don't have to eliminate Merry Christmas or Christmas at the expense of learning about other ones. It's a good thing to learn about other ones. Let's do more talking about that.
You're listening to the Scott Radley Show podcast on 900 CHML.
Jamie West with me today as we're keeping going here with the Easter. How did I do that? With the Christmas debate. I suddenly jumped in a time warp through about 4 months ahead of time. You talked a few moments ago, well, an hour or so ago, when we were introducing you, about all the things you do. And one of the things that you do is a podcast about music and about musicians. So let's get to this one,
Okay.
Famous Christmas fundraising songs. Back in the 80s, there were three famous fundraising songs that came out. We Are the World, but that was summertime. That was right in time for the Live Aid concert. But Do They Know It's Christmas by Band Aid in Britain, and Tears Are Not Enough by Northern Lights here in Canada came out for Christmas. Which one of those, or neither, is the better song?
Oh, hands down, Do They Know It's Christmas is the better.
The British one is better than the Canadian?
Oh, absolutely. I know I'm, you know, my countrymen may not agree with me, but I think a lot of my countrymen would agree. Yeah, no, I think the British one, it was the one that led it all. It was the first one, and it was unique, and it has tremendous power even to this day. It's become, I couldn't imagine Christmas without hearing that song a few times. That's how strongly I feel about that. So there you go. Are you surprised at my answer?
I no, I'm not. I'm not surprised, if only because I'm not sure that I have a either one would have been okay. I mean, I depending on the day, depending on the mood I'm in, whatever. I don't know what else. I would go with either one. I mean, there are times when I think Northern Lights is the better one.
That was the last of the three that was done. There was the Band Aid, and then there was the We Are the World with Quincy Jones and and Michael and Lionel Richie and all that crowd. And then ours, we were the last out of the gate with our song. And it's a fine song. I think David Foster probably composed it, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yes.
But it doesn't have. Just as a song, never mind the wonderful spirit and intent behind it, which is all great across the board, right across the board. They all get the same marks for that. But just as a song itself, it doesn't even come close, in my view, to Band Aid and Do They Know It's Christmas? Do They Know It's Christmas is just a complete emotional uplifter. If anything, I think the Northern Lights song is a bit of a bummer, to be honest. It leaves me feeling a little more depressed. Don't they know the tears are not enough? I don't know. It's weak, I think. Anyway.
It's funny about some of the Canadian singers, and it's not all of us. We have some amazing musicians in this country, but I got to tell you, some of our greatest musicians, their voices aren't exactly what we would call classically brilliant. I mean, Leonard Cohen, Neil Young,
It's yeah, true.
I mean, who, Gordon Lightfoot, although, better, I suppose,
True
but
though, but you're right.
we have a
You're
bunch that like are in the Bob Dylan venue milieu kind of thing here, where you go, it's a good thing they write good songs, because if they were on American Idol, they would not have made it to Hollywood.
well, even Bryan Adams, I'll say, like his ballad voice, I don't like. I didn't like a lot of his ballad, but as a rock singer, I loved his rock songs because he's got a kind of a gravelly sort of voice. His throat sounds a little irritated, and so it lends itself more to a rock song. Just my subjective opinion, for
That's
what
all
it's
right. So
worth.
here's your real test. You can't
All
even
right.
hear the music right now, but can you tell me the first three singers from Tears Are Not from Do They Know It's Christmas? Who sang
Oh,
the who started?
yeah,
These
that's
are
a.
big time. I'm going down the list here. Now I'm cheating because I've got the list in front of me. But Paul Young started.
Paul Young, Bono's the. Th Is he the third?
Boy George is second.
Yeah.
George Michael, then Simon Le
Third?
Bon from Duran Duran, then Sting,
Oh, yeah.
then Bono with the well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you, the most
Yeah, right.
famous.
Yeah, the punctuation on that verse.
Absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely. Now the other one, Tears Not Enough. Do you remember who started Tears Are Not Enough?
Was just thinking about that. Was it Burton?
He was
No.
second. He was second.
Hold on. Hold on. Was it
You're about to say it.
Bryan Adams?
No, Gordon Lightfoot was
Oh,
first.
Gord. And then Burton was
Burton
second,
Cummings,
and
yeah,
then Bryan?
and then Anne Murray,
Oh, boy. Okay.
and then Joni Mitchell. There's another one. Joni Mitchell, another one who doesn't have the traditionally
No.
brilliant voice, but is considered one of the great singers. Then Dan Hill, Neil Young, Bryan Adams,
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Mike Reno with Liberty Silver. Whatever happened to Liberty Silver? Who was Liberty Silver?
She's currently residing in the Where Are They Now file.
Well, a lot of them are. I mean,
Yeah.
it's the list. Okay, so the list of the so it goes: Gordon Lightfoot, Burton Cummings, Anne Murray, Joni Mitchell, Dan Hill, Neil Young, Bryan Adams, Mike Reno with Liberty Silver, Carole Baker, Ronnie Hawkins, and Murray McLaughlin. Okay, Corey Hart. Then you get the French people that no one had heard of outside of Quebec before.
Right, because we had to make it bilingual. Got it.
Right. Yeah. Bruce Coburn, another one who falls into the interesting voice.
Yeah,
Geddy
for
Lee.
Sure.
Geddy Lee. Love
again.
Him.
Again.
There's another one.
Yeah.
Adams
Unique.
And Don Gerard. Alfie Zappacosta with Lisa Dalbello.
Both of them had unique voices. Anyway, carry on.
Carol Pope with Paul Hyde from the Paolas. Salome Bay, Mark Holmes from Platinum Blonde, and Lorraine Segato from the Parachute Club, and Mike Reno. Lorraine Segato, by the way, we got to move along here. Lorraine Segato, my most embarrassing moment on radio, probably one of them. I had her on here, a Canadian rock icon, and I was having her on the show, and as I was introducing her, something through the glass in the window in the studio distracted me for a moment, and I completely lost my train of thought. And when I introduced her, I said, well, thanks for coming on, ma'am. And, and there was a pause, and I know she was thinking,
what?
Ma'am? Really? Ma'am? I just was like, yeah, okay. I just, whatever. Just put a shovel in my head. Like, it was just embarrassing.
I know we got to run a little piece of trivia, though. Her sister, Carla Segato, was the promotions and marketing manager of the very radio station we're on right now back in the 1980s.
Well, and I bet no one called her ma'am.
No, nobody would dare.
It's like, you don't call rock stars ma'am. But anyway, even for Christmas. Hey, as we go, eggnog, yes or no?
Oh, yes. Yeah, but yeah, a couple. But you got to mix it with rum. Like, you have to put proper rum in it. But absolutely, got to have a couple of those. In fact, I'm going to have a couple now when I get off the air.
This last couple of weeks, I've bought a bunch of different eggnogs because one runs out. I like eggnog. I'll tell you, there is such a difference, though, in the store-bought stuff. There is some that is so delicious, and there is some that tastes like it was milked from a toxic cow that was brought from Chernobyl.
Okay, give me a recommendation.
Kawartha Dairies. Just go get Kawartha Dairies. It costs the most, but it is by far the best.
All right, I'm on it.
And they're not even a sponsor, I don't think.
Yeah.
Although they should be.
They should be now.
Kawartha Dairies. Send us a skid of eggnog as thanks. It's okay.
I love it.
Jamie West, you can find his podcast. You can find him. Go to West Pro Media. You can find
me everywhere.
You can find him everywhere. Jamie, thanks for doing this. Have a Merry Christmas.
Scott, a pleasure. A Merry Christmas to you and your family, and a very Happy New Year. We'll talk to you then. Take care.
The Scott Radley Show. Weekday evenings from 6 to 8 on 900 CHML.
The Scott Radley Show podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Scott Radley. Thanks again for listening, and do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. It is free. You will never miss an episode. And also, be sure you rate us and review us. Whatever you think of us, we'll take it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.